Joyous greetings, friends, and welcome to another hour of Holiday Entertainment as we take a trip back in time to Christmases of long ago. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to join me around the old radio in the parlor as I bring you two more great Christmas-themed radio plays. Today, I'm featuring back-to-back episodes of Family Theater, an anthology series that promoted the importance of family life and prayer, two things highly valued back in the first half of the 20th century. The series ran on Mutual Network from February 3, 1947 until September 11, 1957 and used a revolving star-studded cast, which includes some of the greatest Hollywood actors of the day as narrators, announcers, and stars. Among the stars that appeared in the series' 540 episodes were William Shatner, Gene Kelly, and James Stewart. Our first Family Theater episode today was first heard on Thursday, December 11th, 1947, and is titled Substitute Santa. The episode stars Frank McHugh and James Burke.
Mutual Broadcasting System, in cooperation with Family Theater Incorporated, presents Substitute Santa, starring Frank McHugh and James Burke. Ray Milland is your host.
More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. Our happiness so often comes from little things, the simple deeds, the daily thoughtful acts of kindness, the words of encouragement we can and should give to one another. These things mean so much, especially at home, where appreciation and gratitude may often be forgotten because, well, because it is home, and we just take for granted the kindness and encouragement that is given. It's sad to see a home where words of thanks are forgotten, or where there's distrust and constant quarreling, because home was meant to be the happiest place in the world. And it can be with God's help. And in a home where there is the daily practice of family prayer, the daily expression of thanks to God, there is always a new appreciation of members of a family for one another, a new spirit of thankfulness and happiness.
We will hear from Ray Milland later in the program. Now, Family Theater presents Substitute Santa, starring Frank McHugh with James Burke.
Featherstone's department store.
Yes, madam. All complaints on purchases made must be made in person.
Sorry.
Featherstone's department store.
Yes, we deliver in your suburb right up to Christmas Eve.
You're welcome.
Featherstone's department store.
Yes, sir. That's right. The 1,000,000th person entering our toyland will receive as a Christmas present any article on sale in our store.
Yes.
Yes, sir. A mink coat, a diamond ring, anything.
Well, most any day now.
You're welcome.
Featherstone's
Oh, Mr. Featherstone?
Yes.
Mr. Potter, to your office immediately?
Yes, sir.
I'll start paging him right now. You're welcome.
Mr. Archibald Potter, report to Mr. Featherstone's office.
Now what does old Featherstone want? Grigsby, if they ever want you to be the manager of this store, walk. Do not run to the nearest exit.
Don't worry, Mr. Potter. I'm not after your job. I have trouble enough right here in the toy department.
You have troubles.
Oh, I'll match troubles with you any day, Grigsby.
Oh, Mr. Grigsby. Mr. Grigsby.
Yes, Miss Lee?
Santa Claus is ill.
He's what?
He's indisposed. He's not feeling well. Santa Claus has a tummy ache.
Oh, no. No.
He can't do this to me.
Mr. Oswald Potter, report to Mr. Featherstone's office right away.
There's Featherstone again.
Mr. Potter, if Santa
Briggs
Claus...
Briggs, that's one of your troubles. I have troubles of my own. Chin up. Carry on.
Mr. Potter, report immediately to Mr. Featherstone's office. He is urgent.
I'm coming, S.W. I'm coming. If nothing else happens, I'll... I'm sorry. I'm awfully sorry. I beg your pardon. Did I hurt you?
No. I'm all right, really.
Well, that's my fault. It really is. I should have watched where I was going.
No, I wasn't watching either.
Wait, I'll pick up your packages. I hope I didn't break anything.
No, there's nothing fragile in any of them. Just a few trinkets. Some of the things that we don't have in England.
Oh, you're from England. Here, I think that's all your package.
Thank you.
Well, you're from England. Well, what do you know? Well, we import a great many things from your country. I'm Archie Potter. I'm the manager of Featherstone.
Oh, how interesting.
So, you see, I shouldn't go around bumping into people. You said that your name was,
Mr. Potter, please report immediately to Mr. Featherstone's office. Please!
Oh, there it goes again. All right. Oh, look. You're coming into the store again, aren't you?
Yes. I'll be here every day until I find what I'm looking for.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'll be seeing you then. Well, I've got to run now. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Potter. Goodbye.
She's beautiful. She's lovely. She's gorgeous. She's exquisite.
Who's that?
Archie Potter.
Come in.
Oh, yes, sir. Did you want to see me, Mr. Featherstone?
Yes, for the last half hour.
I've been having a little trouble downstairs.
You're having trouble. Come up and match troubles with me sometime. Look here, Potter. You're the one who talked me into giving a Christmas present to the millionth visitor to Toyland.
Yes, F.W. I'm proud to say that was my idea.
Well, I've been thinking it over and I don't like it.
But, F.W., you okayed it.
I know I did, but it's going to cost us too much money. His choice of anything in the store. What's the most expensive article we sell?
Let me see. Probably that mink coat in the fur department. It sells for an even
$4,000. $4,000? Suppose the lucky person is a woman. Suppose she picks that mink coat.
Then we'll give it to her.
We'll give it to her, just like that.
Look, F.W., we've already got more than $4,000 worth of advertising out of this. Newspapers all over the country have played it up. And all the newspapers in town will send reporters and cameramen to cover it.
That's all well and good, but just the
same... And we've sold more than $4,000 worth of merchandise on account of it. In the toy department alone, our sales are up at least $30,000.
Well, that's encouraging. But I still hope she doesn't pick the mink coat.
F.W., haven't you any Christmas spirit?
Why should I? Nobody ever gave me anything. I've worked hard for every penny I've made. I've never found a Santa Claus to...
Oh, speaking of Santa Claus, that reminds me. May I use your telephone?
Go ahead.
Miss Carter, this is Potter speaking. Will you connect me with the toy department? Thank you.
What's the matter now?
Santa Claus isn't feeling well.
He hasn't got anything on the way I feel.
Oh, hello. This is Potter. May I speak to Mr. Grigsby? Hello. Hello, Grigsby. He is? Is that so? Oh, yes. Do that. I'll be down in just a few minutes.
What's wrong?
Santa Claus just taken to the hospital. It looks like appendicitis.
Well, that's a fine thing. Now what are we going
to
do?
Oh, it's already been done, F.W. Grigsby, that nice-looking young chap in the toy department, he's offered a substitute for Santa. He's putting on Santa's outfit now.
Grigsby, eh? Will he want anything extra for it?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to give him a little extra.
Look here, Potter, you're mighty free with other people's money.
Well, I better go down and help Grigsby. Oh, that seventh floor is a madhouse. Everything's been happening down here today.
Why doesn't something good ever happen here?
Well, it does. This morning, just this morning, I bumped into... Oh, F.W., she's gorgeous. She is the most beautiful...
What are you talking about?
She makes you think of white rose petals on black velvet. And she walks like a spring breeze in a field of daffodils.
Who?
Well, the young lady I bumped into. And as dainty... As dainty as a Dresden china doll.
I hope you didn't break her.
Oh, no, I didn't. I just came around a corner, and there she was. And then she came around a corner, and there I was. And we sort of collided. F.W., do you believe in love at first sight?
Potter, Stop making daisy chains out of my paper clips.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And she's about 5 feet two.
Eyes of blue.
No. They're more like an amethyst.
And she walks like a spring breeze in a field of daffodils.
Oh, then you've seen her.
No, I haven't seen her. I'm quoting you. Potter, just how does a spring breeze walk in a field of daffodils? Go ahead, show me.
Well.
Oh, she knocks over ashtrays too, eh?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sure. I didn't see it.
You'd better get out of here. Your spring breeze is too much like a tornado.
All right, F.W. I'll be back later. She does walk like a spring
breeze. Get out of here!
I see you're doubling in whiskers.
Yes, Mr. Potter. Somebody had to take Santa Claus's place, and well, I like kids, so I volunteered.
Good for you. But can you laugh like Santa Claus? You know, Santa has a deep, hearty laugh. Can you give us that?
I don't know. I have a lot of worries on my mind, but I'll try. How's this?
Ho, 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 ho.
Oh, Grigsby, you can do better than that. Look, for a good hearty laugh, I'll get you an extra $50.
Well, that's different.
Oh, good. You got it. Now, you go out there and climb into Sandy's sleigh and go to town.
Yes, sir.
Attaboy, Santa, attaboy. Well, that's settled. I wonder if I'll see her again today. She said she'd be coming back.
Oh, look, Jackie, here's Mr. Potter. Good afternoon, Mr. Potter, sir.
Well, Mrs. Jones and Jackie, too. Hi, Jackie.
Say hello to Mr. Potter.
Well, Mr. Potter.
Mr. Potter's the manager of this store.
Oh, he works here, too, huh?
Yes, Jackie. I work here just like your mother does. She cleans at night with a mop and a scrubbing brush, and I spend the day trying to keep it clean. Confidentially, hers is a better job.
I think so, too.
Jackie! Mr. Potter, I brought Jackie down to see Santa Claus.
Oh, yes? Well, Jackie, there he is, way over there at the other end of Toyland.
Oh, yeah. I see him now. He doesn't look as fat as he did last year.
Well, Santa has worried a lot lately. Some of his little girls and boys haven't been so good.
Oh, I've been a good boy.
Yes, Jackie's been a very good boy, Mr. Potter. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if he were the millionth person to enter Toyland?
It certainly would. Jackie, if you could have anything you wanted in the whole store, what would you pick?
A cowboy suit.
Well, for F.W.'s sake, let's hope you're the one.
By the way, Mr. Potter, what's happened to the winter display we always have at Christmas time?
Which one, Mrs. Jones?
The one that shows the Christ child in the manger, and the bright star and the wise men.
Oh, you mean the nativity scene?
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't we have that one this year?
No, we don't, sir.
Well, now that you mention it, I don't remember seeing it. Why, that window was traditional at Featherstone's. Oh, no window trimmers will hear about this.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it.
I'm glad you did, Mrs. Jones. I'll have that window set up tonight.
Oh, that'll be fine. It's such a beautiful scene.
Hey, Mom, come on.
Oh, all right, Jackie. He's getting impatient, so I guess I'd better go.
I'll see you tonight, Mrs. Jones. You too, Jackie. Let's see her. She might be down on the fourth floor in the dress department. They don't have dresses like that in England. Yes. I think I'll get down
there. Need to have some more water before Mr. Featherstone's office.
Oh, there he goes again. All right, F.W. A head as light as a feather and a heart as hard as a stone. That's Featherstone.
Well?
Everything's under control, F.W. Grigsby makes a fine substitute, Santa. He's laughing his head off.
What's he so happy about?
I promised him an extra $50.
Oh, stop giving away my money.
Grigsby deserves it, F.W.
Well, maybe he is helping business. Oh, all right, give it to him. That reminds me. When will the millionth person enter Toyland?
Well, at the rate they're coming in, it ought to happen about noon tomorrow. We'd like to have you there, F.W.
I'll be there. I want to kiss that $4,000 mink coat goodbye. Of course, not many people know that we have a $4,000 mink coat here, do they?
Oh, yes. It's in the front window.
What?
Yes.
been there all week.
Oh, why did I ever own a department store?
And speaking of windows, do you know that somebody forgot to set up our nativity window? You know, window number 12.
I hate to pull out that merchandise display for something that doesn't bring us any business. After all, it's Christmas.
Listen, F.W., that star-spangled Christmas tree you have in the main lobby, that's not Christmas. Even the seventh-floor Toyland with Santa Claus, that's not Christmas. But that little scene in Bethlehem, that's Christmas. The real Christmas.
Potter, there isn't a window trimmer at this late date to start.
I'll fix it myself tonight. And all by myself if I have to.
Someday you're going to turn the wrong corner. Potter, have you seen your spring breeze blowing around anymore?
No. No, I haven't, F.W., but I'm hoping. Oh, she has a voice like music in the moonlight. And her eyes, they're so deep, you could fall right in and drown.
Potter, don't let this infatuation run away with you. Remember, your first love is Featherstone's department store.
F.W., I have enough troubles without reminding me of that.
Oh, Mr. Potter, that window's going to be beautiful. I didn't know you could trim windows, too.
Well, Mrs. Jones, to tell you the truth, I didn't know I could either. But the subject, like the nativity, it's inspiration.
Oh, it's just like a beautiful picture. The manger and the little Christ child and the bright star.
I wonder if Jackie succeeded in finding some straw. Then we'll be finished.
Mr. Potter, don't you think that Mary, the mother, should be closer to the manger, sort of bending over like?
Well, Mrs. Jones, you're right. I'll fix that.
Here's some straw, Mr. Potter. I found some in a box.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. That's just the right kind of straw. Mrs. Jones, I'm afraid we're making a mess for you to clean up.
Oh, my land, Mr. Potter. That's what I'm here for. See, Jackie, he's putting the straw in the manger around the little Christ child.
Yes, Jackie. This shows you what happened many, many years ago in a little town called Bethlehem.
Was he a real baby?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, Jackie. This is one Christmas story that's real and true.
That's what I was talking to Jackie about this afternoon, Mr. Potter.
Yes, Christmas is the birthday of the infant Jesus.
That's the real meaning of Christmas, Jackie. Mrs. Jones, you're a very devout person.
And why shouldn't I be? I'm on my knees the whole night through. And I try to pray just as sincerely with a scrubbing brush in my hand as I do with my prayer book.
Mr. Porter, when I brought the straw in, I noticed something. There's a man in one of the show windows.
A man? Well, we don't have any window trimmers working tonight.
Well, there's a man in one of them.
Which one?
That big window down there.
Well, that's where the furs are. Why, there's a $4,000... You wait here, Jackie. I'm going to go and take a look.
And I'll go with you, sir. And I'll take my mop along just in case.
Yes, yes, all right. Come on. But everybody now, be careful. I cannot imagine how a man got in... Unless he hid in the store.
Maybe that's what he did. We'll soon find out.
Shh, shh. This is the window. Yes. The door into the window was open.
Now you chase him out, and I'll swat him with the mop.
All right. Get ready. What's going on in here?
Oh, hello, Potter.
Why, hello, Mr. Featherstone. It's you.
Well, who did you expect? Miss Hush?
It's all right, Miss Jones. It's the old man. It's Mr. Featherstone himself.
No, sure. And I was all ready to knock somebody for a home run.
F.W., what are you doing in the fur window?
I was looking at this $4,000 mink. Is that it?
That's it.
It doesn't look so wonderful. Why, here's one for $325 that looks so much like it, you can hardly tell the difference.
Well, the cheaper one is a copy of it. An imitation mink. It's a good imitation. And it's a good coat. But it's not the real thing.
I see. Well, you don't have to put a spotlight on this $4,000 one. It's too conspicuous. That's the first thing somebody's going to think of when he has choice of anything in the store.
Well, we're trying to sell the coat before that happens, F.W., that's the only $4,000 coat we have. If we can sell it, then we won't have to give it away.
I never thought of that. Put two spotlights on it.
Okay, F.W.
Say, Mom, is that old man Featherstone?
Hush, Jackie. Yes, this is the man who owns the store.
Who's this?
This is Mrs. Jones,
of the cleaning department.
And this is my boy, Jackie.
My mother says you're a fine man.
Well, she does, eh?
She says you give a lot of work to a lot of people.
Yes, I guess I do.
But she says you're a lonely old codger, too.
Jackie! Never mind him, Mr. Featherstone.
The boy is right, Mrs. Jones. I am a lonely old codger.
Mom, why don't we invite Mr. Featherstone over to our house for Christmas dinner?
Oh, no, Jackie. Mr. Featherstone already has a place to eat Christmas dinner.
Yes, of course. I always eat Christmas dinner at my club. But thank you just the same.
Come on, Jackie. We mustn't bother Mr. Featherstone. And besides that, I've got the main lobby to scrub.
Bye, Mr. Featherstone.
Goodbye, Jackie. Mrs. Jones, Christmas dinner, eh? Do you suppose the boy meant it?
I'm sure he meant it.
They'd enjoy having me?
Why, certainly they would. They're real people. You're not a millionaire to them. You're just
a lonely old codger. Well, Potter, you might as well get back to your Christmas window. I saw it from outside. It's mighty nice.
Wow. Well, thanks. All right, F.W., I'll go back and finish it.
Do that. A $4,000 mink coat and a $325 coat that looks just like it. Now, if somebody accidentally switched the price tags on those two coats just for one day, who would know the difference? Then, if somebody picks the $4,000 one, it would only cost us $325. Why not? Oh, Featherstone, that's what's wrong with you. You're always thinking about money. That's why you're a lonely old codger.
Kindly step back, folks. Let the people get into Toyland. Don't crowd, please. Don't crowd. Remember, there are children here.
Potter, are we getting near the finish?
Oh, there you are, F.W. I was afraid you'd miss it.
One at a time, please. Go through the turnstile in the single file.
Yes, we're counting the last 100. It'll happen any minute now.
Good. I'll be glad to get it over with.
Oh, yes, yes. It's been great, F.W. Oh, look. Look, there she is.
Who? What are you talking
about? That's her. That's her. That's the girl who,
Oh, you mean the spring breeze. Say, she's all right.
F.W., she's getting in line. She's coming into Toyland. Oh, if she could only be the 1,000,000th person.
Potter, that sort of thing only happens in books.
Well, she's 1 in 1,000,000, of course. If she could only be the one in this million. Miss Hunter, what's the count?
75.
75, 76, 77, 70. It could be, 99, 80. She's getting closer. 81, 82.
83, she'll never make it. 84, 85.
86, it's going to be close. 7, 88. She's 89.
90, 91. You know how to pick them. 92, 93. She's not bad. 94.
95, oh, I'm afraid. Look at the 96 and 7. I'll never be the same again. 98, 99. 1,000,000, she made it! Ma'am, you are it.
What's all this about?
Well, haven't you read her advertisements? You're the 1,000,000th person entering our Toyland.
Oh, dear.
And now I can find out your name.
I'm Margaret Allen.
Mrs. or Miss,
oh,
I hope. That's wonderful. And you're from...
From Liverpool.
That's marvelous. Ladies and gentlemen, I have the happy pleasure to announce that the 1,000,000th person entering Toyland is Miss Margaret Allen of Liverpool, England.
Alan, will you pose for a picture, please?
Yes, I'm so bewildered by all this sudden attention. I really...
Hold on, Potter. I want you in this picture, too. After all, I'm only the owner of the stall.
Oh, yes. Excuse me, Miss Allen. This is F.W. Featherstone himself.
I'm very pleased to meet you, Mr. Featherstone.
How do you do, young lady? Now, you fellows with the cameras, be sure you get all three of us in.
Hold it. There. Thanks, fellas. Thanks.
Now, young lady, what do you want for Christmas?
I don't understand.
Well, it's like this, Miss Allen. For being the 1,000,000th person to enter Toyland, you get your choice of any article on sale in the store.
Oh, goodness, you mean any article I want?
Yes, anything from a stick of gum to a $4,000 mink coat.
Yes, anything you want.
I know what I want. I don't know whether I'd ever be able to use it, but this is what I want. A wedding gown.
A wedding gown?
You shall have the best wedding gown in the store. Better than that, I'll include a complete wedding trousseau.
Oh, Mr. Featherstone, I don't know how to thank you.
Well, wait. What I would like to know is, who was the lucky man?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
You see, in England during the war, I met an American soldier. I fell in love with him. We planned to be married on Christmas Day, but he was called away from England.
Oh, well, that was a tough break.
And while he was gone, my home in Liverpool was struck by a bomb. Oh, I spent months and months in the hospital, and when I got out, I was well physically, but I couldn't remember anything.
Amnesia.
Well, that's what they called it. I couldn't even remember the name of my sweetheart. I'm sure if I see him, I'll know him and he'll all come back.
But how did you happen to come in here to Featherstone?
Well, I found a letter in my belongings. It was just signed Joe, but I'm sure it was from him. And he said in his letter that when the war was over, he'd go back to his old job at Featherstone.
We have a lot of returned soldiers here. Half of them are named Joe.
I started coming here yesterday. I intended to go to every department of the store and see if I could find him.
Well, if he's in the store, we'll find him for you.
Miss Allen, I'm from the Daily Gazette. Would you mind posing with Santa Claus while we take a picture?
That's a good idea. You know, Potter, giving this Christmas present and making this young lady so happy has made me feel good, too.
That's the fun you've been missing, F.W. Come on, Miss Allen. Santa Claus over here.
Oh, and what do you want, little man?
Here you are. Here's Santa Claus, Miss Allen. Climb right into the sleigh with him. Come on, F.W., you get in, too. You've been kind of a Santa Claus to her.
Margaret. It's Margaret. Margaret Allen.
Bigsby, do you know this girl?
Know her? I hunted all over England for her.
Grigsby! Joe Grigsby, it's you! Oh, Joe!
Margaret!
Why, Potter, I thought you...
Oh, my dream girl. And what happens? She marries Santa Claus. And a substitute Santa at that.
Substitute Santa starred Frank McHugh as Mr. Potter with James Burke as Mr. Featherstone. Now, here is your family theater host for tonight, Ray Milland.
This is the age of invention, the day of scientific discovery. There are discoveries in atomic power and supersonics. There are inventions for super planes, super bridges, super buildings, and millions of other inventions that find their way to farms, factories, and homes. No one questions the progress made in things scientific and intellectual. But what about the simple art of living together? And the simplest art, because it's so fundamental, the art of living together as a family. In a land of freedom, each man's home is his castle. A home isn't only built of stone or bricks or walls or roof. It's built with the spirit of a boy and girl who pledge their unchanging love in the sacred bond of marriage. And where there's God's blessing in the daily practice of family prayer and a home, it is in truth an unchanging love. Because the family that prays together stays together. Before saying goodnight, I'd like to thank Frank McHugh and James Burke for their performances this evening. Our thanks to Harry Lawrence for writing tonight's play and to Max Terre for his music. This production of Family Theater Incorporated was directed by David Young. Others who appeared in tonight's play were Una Mordashed, Margie List, Joe Graham, Bob Rockwell, Gwen Delano, Phil Bernard, and Bob Young. Next week, our Family Theater stars will be Johnny Johnston and Catherine Grayson in A Rose by Any Other Name. And your host will be Don Amici. This is Ray Milland saying good night and God bless you. This series of the Family Theater broadcast is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this kind of program, by the Mutual Broadcasting System, which has responded to this need, and by a friend of the New York Foundling Hospital, which cares for homeless and motherless babies without distinction of race, creed, or color. Be with us next week at the same time when our Family Theater stars will be Johnny Johnston and Catherine Grayson, with Don Amici as host. Tony Lafrano speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that delightful story of Substitute Sam from the heartwarming series Family Theater. The episode was first heard sometime on Thursday, December 11, 1947, on the Mutual Broadcasting Network, and starred Frank McHugh and James Burke. Next up, our second and final play for today, also from Family Theater. The story is titled Lullaby at Christmas and was first heard on Wednesday, December 13, 1950. The story is narrated by the late great Roddy McDowell and is based on Charles Tazewell's 1949 story of the same name. I hope you enjoy it.
The following program is transcribed.
From Hollywood, the Mutual Network, in cooperation with Family Theater, brings you a Christmas fantasy set in a framework of Christmas music. To tell you about our presentation of Charles Tazewell's classic Lullaby of Christmas, we present Ruth Hussey.
Thank you, Tony Frano. You know, one of the wonderful things about Christmas is the pretty web of legend, song, and story that has grown up around it without obscuring for any of us, I hope, the truth of the matter. At another time of year, we might call the joyousness of spirit experience an excess. But in the expansive mood that Christmas brings to everything, I'd use a more gentle word, a more generous description. Won't you agree that the right word is abundance? I think it's out of this abundance that most Christmas fantasy springs, out of the fact that the real truth of Christmas is so wonderful, so dramatic, so quickening to the heart and to the imagination. And that leads us to Lullaby of Christmas, which Roddy McDowell is going to narrate for us.
This story is as old as Christmas, and yet is neither remembered nor told except by the tongueless ones, the water, the wind, the rain, and the snow, by the grasses, the trees, the rocks, and the earth. They have told the story for almost 2,000 Christmases past, and they'll still be telling it 2,000 times 2,000 Christmases to come. It will be told by a wind rustling a tree of palm or pine, or of maple or mosa. By water as it crowds against the bank or shore of brook, lake, river, and ocean, and all the scattered seven seas. By rain tiptoeing across the roofs and skylights of every building north, east, south, and west of Greenwich. By the singing grasses of St. Pampas, bush, and savannah, and by the icy twang of sleet stubble on prairie, heath, and plain. It will be told by the sucking swamp mud, and the hard-ringing frozen earth, and the tumbling rock, and the migrant sand. It will be told whether or not men listen, or whether or not there are men to listen. For as the storytellers are eternal, so is their story eternal. Their story of the Lullaby of Christmas. Whenever someone looked in his direction and bellowed, "Hey, you!" he came running because he was eager to please. But A.U. wasn't his name. No one knew from whence he came, or when, or how, or why. It was quite possible that he was a forlorn and useless bit of jetsam from one of the caravans that were forever appearing and disappearing like mirages, with camel bells clanging, dogs barking, and drivers howling for right of way through the narrow, crowded roadways of Bethlehem. He might have been 8. Or he could have been 9, a childish collection of angles and knobs with an animated pipe stem on each corner for an arm or leg. His clothing was an assortment of tattered rags fastened together with knots, thorns, and bits of cord, and it stayed with him when he ran merely because his greater speed was never quite equal to the greater law of gravity. And he was always running to something from something, his sandals, which had been owned and discarded by 3 much larger wearers, flapping up and down and right and left, and his bobbing head perching precariously on his scrawny little neck like a fledgling heron on one leg. And yet, there was something about the boy that made people notice him. There was something appealing in his dark eyes and something about his cherub's mouth that unlocked the heart. Now and then, someone along the street would stop him and ask his name. But when A.U. tried to answer, from out of his cherub's mouth, instead of words, would come a horrible sound. A scourging, piercing, ear-scraping, howling and shrieking. Yes, A.U. was without gift of speech. And at night, in the stable of the inn where he made his bed, he would curl up in the fragrant hay and think of all the beautiful magic words that he would like to say. Just suppose that a miracle should take place during the night. Just suppose that he should wake up tomorrow morning and walk over to that stall and say,
"Good morning, Mr. Cow."
Oh, wonderful. And then he'd run outside to the pen and call out,
"Hello, Mr. Sheep."
Oh, magnificent morning. He could talk. He could say anything and everything that he wanted to say. And wouldn't the innkeeper's wife be surprised when she handed out the scraps for his breakfast and loudly and clearly he said,
"I'm terrible obliged, ma'am. Just terrible obliged."
And then, when he was called to do some task or errand, he could tell the innkeeper and his guests that his name wasn't A.U. Why, that wasn't any kind of name at all. It was just an easy and careless way they all had of shouting, "Hey, you!
Hey, you!
My name isn't A.U.
Hey, don't you hear me? Hey, you!
My name's Ezekiel."
But the most stupendous, overwhelming thing of all, he would be able to sing. Yes, sing as no one had ever sung before, with every word and note so clear and sweet and perfect that everyone in Bethlehem would stand rock still to listen. He would be able to sing with the other children when they played their games, and he would be able to sing right along with the foreign music maker, the one with the lyre and the tame bear who walked the roadways and sang for coins.
Babylon maiden will hasten the hours with kisses of honey and cinnamon flowers.
And a night in the inn, when the roaring fire was juggling fat hot sparks in the black cavern chimney, and the innkeeper and his guests were overflowing with wine and song, he'd never need hide himself in the darkest corner in fear that they would make him join in just so that they could laugh at him. No, he'd be able to stand right by the fire and listen, because he'd be able to sing that song much better than anyone in the room.
Oh, fill the bowl up to the brim, that memory blend with wine, and drink to glories of the past.
And so, each night, before A.U. closed his eyes, he said a prayer for the gift of speech and song, and faithfully promised that if God saw fit to grant these great blessings to a small boy, that he would never use any words that weren't kind and gentle and reverent, and that he would never sing any songs that were not beautiful, joyful, and harmonious. Then he burrowed deep into the hay and fell asleep, warm and content in his belief that on this night, God had heard him. In the morning, when the rising sun reached through the doorway and touched his shoulder to wake him up, he would open his eyes, and then he'd open his mouth, and then very loudly and thankfully he'd say,
"Oh, thank you, God. Thank you very much."
But morning after morning, God disappointed him. And finally, after months of mournings had vanished into Egypt, A.U. knew that he would always be just as he was, as inarticulate as a tumblebug, as a wood tick, as a worm. For a few nights, A.U. cried himself to sleep in black discouragement. And then he resolved that he would never open his mouth again to make people laugh. And when his work was done, he trudged out of Bethlehem and wandered over the fields and hills. Travelers sometimes wondered when they saw his lonely little figure against the sky. And none of them knew that he really wasn't lonely at all. Why, he couldn't be lonely among friends. For he discovered that a brook running over its pebbles and stones could chatter and prattle, sing to him. And if he answered, or even if he sang, The brook didn't care a ripple that the noises he made were strange and unmusical. It went right along singing as loudly and joyfully as ever. Yes, and the winds were forever whispering or humming or caroling. Sometimes they were so filled with music that they shook their great trees and woke them up, and they tossed the great limbs and made every leaf and twig join in with the singing. So Ayu sang too. And the trees didn't care, and the winds didn't care. Neither did the rain when it thrummed on the rocks or strummed through the tall grasses. It went right on just as though his horrible din was the most sublime music it has ever heard. And then, when he was tired, Ayu would lie on the ground with his ear pressed tight against the moss and listen to the small, faraway voices, the little, scarcely audible voices deep in the ever-moving, ever-singing earth itself. The song they sang was very sweet, but so faint and distant that, try as he might, he could never learn the melody. And so, listening to his friends, the tongueless ones, Ayu would fall fast asleep. And in the days that followed, he was a little scarecrow stuffed with happiness. A standing on tiptoe happiness that was more prolific than a cottontail rabbit. An invincible, conquering happiness that could summon up more legions than the Roman Emperor. So far above the miracle he'd asked for in his prayers that Ayu took a long time every night to thank God for his generosity. He thanked him so meticulously and particularly and abundantly that his small fingers developed a cramp, and on each round, knobby knee was a round, knobby callus. And then, without the slightest warning, coming with cockcrow as any other day, wearing the same identical colors of dawn as yesterday's beneficent morning, came the dreadful day. It was begun by the innkeeper kicking methodically at the mound of hay where Ayu had buried himself and bawling,
"Ayu, come on, crawl out of there and get work. On your feet or I'll slice out your tongue and sell it for tallow."
Then the dreadful day was helped along by the innkeeper's fat and fuming wife. At mid-morning, when Ayu's stomach was tied in a double-bone knot with hunger, he stuck one eye around the frame of the kitchen door to let it beg for his breakfast, and the innkeeper's wife doused him with slimy dishwater and screamed,
"Don't come grunting and squealing for scraps at my door when I'm busy, you miserable gutter rubbish! Get out with the rest of the swine!"
And in the afternoon, as Ayu was racing through the town on one of his endless errands, a tired thong snapped on one of his oversized sandals, and the sandal went skittering through the air, purposely ignoring half a dozen people who would have merely scowled or scolded, and dropped deliberately and maliciously on the proud and helmeted head of a swaggering centurion. The centurion plucked Ayu out of the crowd by his rags and lifted him up off the ground and held him dangling at arm's length, demanding his name and his dwelling place. And when Ayu tried to answer, but only made meaningless sounds, the centurion shook him until he flipped and flopped like a limp, grief-stricken starfish. And he bellowed,
"Look at me, oh, you driveling, babbling, voiceless offshoot of a scurvy, dribble-mouthed alley rat. If ever again you foul my eyes, I'll cage you and send you to Rome to feed the emperor's lions."
And through the remaining hours of the dreadful day's afternoon, no matter how fast Ayu ran, the story of his affliction and humiliation always ran faster. It was a street, an alley, or even a doorway ahead of him. He seemed to run through a forest of pointing fingers that threatened to pin him to a wall, under a sky of leering eyes that fell and clung to him like leeches, by endless craters of jeering mouths that spouted laughter like bottomless goatskin water bags. And that night, as each hour slowly yielded to an older one, and the dreadful day neared its end, Ayu was kept late at his tasks in the inn. Anyone could believe that half the known world had journeyed to Bethlehem, and the inn was so crowded that the ancient floor seemed to sag from the mass weight of weary bone and unwashed flesh. A.U. longed to bury his shame and tears in the nestling warmth of the stable hay. But his tired, trembling legs carried him about with staggering armloads of steaming bowls and spoons. He picked him up, hand slapped his ears to ringing, and his knees jolted his aching ribs. The one who discovered and recognized A.U. was a huge mountain of a man whose eyes rolled like quicksilver in their bead beds of jellied fat. One hairy paw cut a crumb of stew from his beard, while the other fastened on A.U.'s hair and lifted him, his legs still running desperately in the air, to the tabletop. Then, in a voice that would have silenced Balaam's donkey, he brayed to the listening ears,
"Look here, my friends. Behold this miserable insect that I've captured for your examination and amusement. But you must not laugh, my friend. You must gather close with ears agape, because this struggling thing has a wondrous golden voice, never equal on land or sea or up in heaven. Oh, yes, I swear it is true. A centurion made it chirp today, and his music was so sweet, it broke my heart and made the angels weep in ecstasy. Tell me, would you like to hear it sing? Got a laugh. Let melody spout forth. Do you not hear me? When you sing, I shall I slit your tongue like a rose, so you can speak like a human, eh? Sing, I tell you. Sing, sing.
And so, standing on the table, A.U. tried to sing. And at every tuneless howl, the crowd shocked its mockery. At every unmelodious screech, it roared its derision. At every discordant squeak, it loosed a thunderbolt of laughter that crashed and splintered on his head. And his mind was fear. And his body was shame. And his blood was tears. But he went on. He went on until the crowd had rung the last standing guffaw, the final satisfying chuckle, the ultimate forced snigger from his wretched little body. And when it released him, he ran blindly off through the dark labyrinth of Bethlehem, a terror-stricken shadow racing for the quiet hills and the warm, comforting voices of the tongueless one. Tonight there were no voices. Even though A.U. held his breath, even though he strained his ears, he could hear no sound from the tongueless ones. Even when he threw himself down and laid his ear to the ground, there's no small sound to hear. Even the little voices deep in the earth had stopped their whispering and were quiet. Then A.U. howled and babbled and tried to make the tongueless ones answer him. But they only waited and listened. And he croaked and screamed at them. But still they waited and listened. And he wept and shrieked to them. But they kept silent while they waited and listened. Just listened and waited. Then A.U. rolled over on his back to listen too. And he saw that a great white star had risen and was shining over Bethlehem. A star so bright it blinded him. And so he closed his eyes, and exhausted by the dreadful day, he went to sleep. It was close to morning when A.U. returned to the inn. He tiptoed across the frosty stones of the dark courtyard and crept into the stable. For a moment, his fear held him motionless. For the stable was bathed with a bright, glowing radiance that revealed every corner and straw and peg and mote of dust. And it flowed like molten sunlight over a man and a woman and a manger where a child was cradled. Neither the man nor the woman appeared surprised to see A.U. It was as though they had expected him to come and were waiting for him. So he stole nearer, and he looked down at the child. And the child lifted small hands and smiled at him. Then A.U. felt that he must speak to this child. We whispered,
"Hello there."
And the words he spoke were as clear and melodious as the water of the brook. Then he said,
"Hello, child."
And the words that came from his lips were as sweet as the winds, as perfect as each raindrop, and as soft as the long flowing grasses. Then A.U. knew why he'd been born never to speak until this moment, and why the tongueless ones of God's world of water and earth and air had all sung to him, and why tonight they had all been still and silent and waiting. Now the waiting was over. Now they were his voice and he was their song. And this was their song to the child of the manger.
Close your eyes, precious one, for the world is your cradle. Close your eyes, blessed babe, while we sing you to sleep. Lullaby of Christmas, lullaby for thee, precious eyes, sleepy eyes.
Yes, this story is as old as Christmas, and yet it's neither remembered nor told except by the tongueless ones, the water, the wind, the rain, and the snow, the grasses, the trees, the rocks, and the earth. It will be told this Christmas by a wind rustling a tree of palm or pine, or maple or mimosa, by water as it crowds against the bank or shore of brook, lake, river, and ocean, and all the scattered seven seas, by rain as it patters across the roofs and skylights. Yes, and by the singing grasses of the southern pampas, bush, and savanna, and the icy twang of sleeted stubble on prairie, heath, and plain. The few ears that listen may wonder at the strange, childlike quality in the voices of all these storytellers. But that's so very easy to understand. It is the bright, joyful, exultant tone of the boy who sang for them one early morning, one Christmas morning, one glorious morning in Bethlehem.
Hollywood Family Theater has brought you transcribed Charles Taswell's Love of Christmas, narrated by Roddy McDowell. Ruth Hussey was your hostess. Others in our cast were Michael Edwards, Ted DeCorsia, Irene Tedrow, and Bill Johnstone. Music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. Family Theater's director was Joseph F. Mansfield. This series of Family Theater broadcasts is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this type of program, by the Mutual Network, which has responded to this need, and by the hundreds of stars of stage, screen, and radio who have so unselfishly given of their time enough to appear on our Family Theater stage. To them and to you, our humble thanks. This is Tony Lafrano expressing the wish of Family Theater that the blessing of God may be upon you and your home, and inviting you to be with us next week when Family Theater will present The Crossroads of Christmas, starring Irene Dunne and Rita Johnson. Join us, won't you?
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
What a beautiful story that was. You were listening to Lullaby Christmas from the series Family Theater. The episode was narrated by Roddy McDowell and was based on a 1949 story by Charles Tazewell. The radio version was first heard on December 13, 1950 on the Mutual Network. We have a little bit of time left before we part ways once again. I thought I would fill that time by playing Gene Autry's Here Comes Santa Claus from 1947.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blixen and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. So hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle, jangle, oh, what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor, he loves you just the same. Santa Claus knows we're all God's children, that makes everything right. So fill your hearts with Christmas cheer, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He'll come around when chimes ring out that it's Christmas morn again. Peace on earth will come to all if we just follow the light. So let's give thanks to the Lord above, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blixen, all his reindeers pulling on the rein. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
You just heard the original recording of Here Comes Santa Claus by Gene Autry from 1947. I hope you enjoy it. I'm afraid it's almost time for us to say goodbye for the day. If you'd like to send me your thoughts, you may email me at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com, or you may write me at Old Parlor Radio, 2080 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS Studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.